Military Mondays with David Katz.
Time is 8:17. Major David Katz, a very, very good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you, Howard?
Excellent. Thank you very, very much. All right. So, wars, possible wars in 2020.
Okay. Difficult to predict. I think we're living in times that are a little more peaceful than they were in the past, but there's definitely some hotspots there in the world that are worth watching. Mm. And that could blow over and possibly be the center of the next conventional war that we're going to see. I've taken a look at it and gone through a couple of possibilities, and there seems to be two or three hotspots in the world that we should be keeping an eye on. The first one is in India. There's a three-part a problem where the Chinese, the Pakistanis, and the Indians are involved in the Kashmir area. And that's a strong possibility that could blow over one way or the other. That's been a war that's been going on now for 70 years. And that's definitely an area of concern. Obviously, the Middle East is just full of problems. And where I think there's going to be a problem there is with Iran. And Iran is the center of a movement over there to a power struggle between two or three or four opposing camps.
But what it seems to me is that area also seems to be, the lines are becoming almost clearer than they have been in the past. So whereas maybe I never really understood who was aligned with who.
Yes.
Today we're getting a much better sense.
Absolutely. There was confusion a couple of years back.
Yes,
I agree with you. And me and you used to sit there and I used to say to you that the Americans and Israelis at certain times turned a blind eye. In fact, I went a little bit further than that to ISIS. And you looked at me a little bit incredulously, and everybody's backing different people at different times. So yes, it has sort of solidified now. The positions have solidified, and we can more clearly see what's happening over there. And definitely, there seem to be two solid camps now: the Iranians and their followers, and the Saudi Arabians, Israelis on the other side opposing it.
Right.
And of course, then we've got the Turkish thrown into the mix over there, and the Kurds. The Kurds are a huge possible future problem. They spread the Kurdish so-called non-state spreads into all those countries: Iran, Turkey, Syria, Iraq.
Yeah,
so that's a future area that we're all going to have to watch over there.
Do you think we're going to? I mean, I read over the weekend that more than 900,000 people were displaced over the last couple of months in Syria, refugees created, and of course we don't talk about it, we don't hear about it. It's just not something that I don't know, for some reason intrigues people or evokes any of our sympathies. But do we see any resolution to the Syrian war?
We call it a civil
war, but I'm not sure.
When you say resolution, I'm not sure about resolution. Now, when you've got a strong man, and we've seen that in Libya also, where you've got a war in Iraq, as Saddam Hussein, where you've got that strong man and he's running a total dictatorship, it seems to put a sense of stability over the area, whether it's great to live under that type of regime or not.
Yeah, that's
so we're talking in Syria now, we're talking about a strong man who survived the last 5 or 6 years of civil war. He's come out on top. And maybe he can impose his will over the people again and restore some type of peace in the area, albeit under a terrible dictatorship, where the political aspirations of many, many of the people in Syria are not going to be catered for. So it depends. One man's peace is another man's jail sentence.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So, will peace be restored to Syria? I think it's resolving itself. I mean, with ISIS now being pushed out and the Syrian government now certainly coming to the fore as the strongest arm, backed by the Russians, backed by the Iranians. So some type of a balance is going to be restored to that area. But I think that the major problem there are the political aspirations of the Kurds who live in Syria, Iraq, Iran, and Turkey. And these are going to have to be catered for, because they are a force to be reckoned with. And they've proved now that they can stand on their own 2 feet and put up a decent fight against whoever comes their way. And their political aspirations are going to have to be taken care of. And somebody's going to have to pay the price in territory. And all four of those countries are at risk of losing territory to the Kurds. So that's definitely a flashpoint out there. And another one in the area is obviously Israel-Hezbollah. That's just a war waiting to happen. I mean, that's
It's so fascinating that they haven't gone directly to war at this point. It's all sort of happening via
through proxies via Syria and that type of thing.
Hamas and all sorts of
and on the southern borders instead of the northern. It seems to be pretty peaceful at this stage of the game. Things are not happening over there. They haven't tested each other, but it's a accident waiting to happen. I think we can see that. We can expect that to happen in the near future.
Right.
No doubt about it. And they're sitting on these huge missile systems and somebody's going to press the button somewhere along the line. The Israelis can't tolerate this presence on their northern border. And I think once the Syrian situation has resolved itself and Hezbollah is no longer be able to use their territory to attack Israel, then I think the center of gravity is going to move back to Lebanon.
But when you talk about Syria resolving itself, why wouldn't that include part of that resolution allowing Hezbollah to be there?
Well, I think it destabilizes the Syrians. I mean, right now we're looking at the Israelis going into Syria and bombing certain areas of Syria. And this is not something the Syrian government is going to want in the future. If they're able to regain control of the country, they're going to want to impose their military rule over all of it. And right now, Hezbollah runs some of it. The Iranians are running some of it. The Russians are running some of it. So the logical conclusion at the end of the day is that the Syrian government is going to want to control its own territory by itself. And it's going to put pressure on Hezbollah and the other proxies that are occupying Syrian territory now to not provoke Israel to attack. Because it just doesn't pay the Syrians, especially if they're going to try and rebuild themselves. So the only avenue open then for Hezbollah will be to attack once again from Lebanon.
Yeah, interesting. Just going back to India, just tell us again how that could be a possible area of conflict.
Well, we've got this area of Kashmir.
Mm.
So not only is it a disputed territory, but in future it's also a disputed water source, an important water source for all three countries, an important territory. It's strategically situated in between the three territories. So China has claims on it. Pakistan has claims on it. India has claims on it. We've seen lately that India has imposed its will and tightened up on Kashmir. And that's a possible flashpoint. Certainly when water becomes a scarce resource, with all three of those countries trying to vie for control over this very, very important area. And it's been an area of conflict for 70 years. It has a history of it. The Chinese and the Indians haven't had a go at each other for the last few decades. But it doesn't preclude this happening in the future again. So that's a very strong flashpoint out there that has to be kept in check and is worthwhile watching.
What's interesting to me as well is we've been talking all morning about the coronavirus.
Yes.
And obviously, you know, we've been making a song playlist, having some fun with it because, you know, we don't have the capability of dealing with it in South Africa, so we might as well have a playlist. But the reality is that countries are becoming a lot tighter around borders. We've seen it all over the world that people are being turned away if they come from areas or origins that might be harboring the virus. Do you think that this type of thing, of this situation, could also lead to potential conflict?
There's no doubt about it. You know, I was thinking about bacterial warfare the other day, and we're seeing it in play. How powerful is it to have some type of a bacterial capability? You can see what it does. It just decimates the economies of where it happens. Whether there are going to be tighter border controls in the future, I think certainly they're going to be. We've seen a reversal of the sort of global village type of atmosphere that was around in the early 2000s, where it looked like all the barriers were falling. We've seen Brexit. We've seen people going for independence. We've seen nationalism. I'm seeing a tightening up of borders everywhere else. I've seen a new nationalism happening. Where people are no longer willing to let those international borders fall. We're seeing that now.
And, which is so interesting because...
And certainly this adds to it, Howard. Mm. This type of virus and type of thing. It adds to it. Just adds to the general feeling of nationalistic fervor. And saying, you know, look where this is emanating from. It comes from China. So let's just block all the Chinese type of thing. So it's definitely adding to the whole nationalist theory.
It's interesting because I'm not really sure what the answer is. I know we don't want to be perceived as discriminating against another nation but if you think about South Africa, if we had a situation where in Lesotho, this Ebola blew up.
Yeah.
We would say, hold on a minute, you close those borders. We don't want people from Lesotho coming into South
apparently
Africa.
Doesn't help. Apparently doesn't help. There was a situation of Ebola on the Uganda.
I'm just
Rwanda,
using this. I'm just using this as an example.
Absolutely.
You know, I think it's kind of a. It's much easier to say it when it's further away.
Sure.
I'm saying something that that is
your
really frightening.
Your knee-jerk reaction is to make it a national problem.
Right.
A nationalistic problem. It's a nationalistic problem, and we ascribe the disease to a certain population group, and we discriminate against them. Absolutely, I can see that happening, and especially in this type of world that we have today, it allows for this type of thinking, which I think would have been. I mean, we were heading in a different direction. I honestly believe in the late 90s and the early 2000s, we were heading in a different direction. You know, we were full of hope. The Iron Curtain had come down. The Soviet Union was a thing of the past. Those international borders were falling all over the place. People were exchanging ideas and that type of thing. And that it has reversed to a certain extent. These type of outbreaks of diseases doesn't help the situation.
No, it certainly doesn't.
No, absolutely.
Very interesting indeed. All right, we've got a few more minutes. Any other hotspots that you'd be concerned about?
Well, certainly, I mean, the Chinese pose a threat in Southeast Asia. There's always that, there's this long-standing dispute between China and Japan over tiny little islands.
And it's not really over tiny little islands, it's really about the Second World War.
It's really about
China
the Second World
doesn't
War.
Feel that they've ever really
apologized. The
Japanese haven't apologized. China doesn't feel that it's saved face. It hasn't got its dignity back. And the Chinese are not, they're just not letting the situation go. So when it's about the islands, it's not really
about
the islands.
It's not really about the islands, but there's a conflict situation over there, especially with North Korea sitting in the middle of all that. You've got the Taiwanese also now that are continuously threatened by the Chinese. And you've got that tension over there. So that's another area that certainly is a tinder. Yeah, Hong Kong is another one. Especially if the West now starts trying to impose influence on Hong Kong and that type of thing, that could flare up pretty quickly. So those generally are the hotspots in the world. And but overall, I would say we live in a more peaceful world than we did even a couple of decades back. No doubt about that. Yeah.
Amazing. So, absolutely,
but it's still dangerous. We live in dangerous times.
We do. And I think we probably always will. It's about to go 8:30. Major David Katz, thank you. As always, really an interesting conversation. Here's your news headlines with Sanati.